Alex, I believe I have reached the equivalent of nirvana.
Tell me more.
Well, I have been sleeping on my cozy earth sheets.
Wow.
And when I get up in the morning, I put on my fantastic jogger suit.
Yes.
Which is a funny way to put it, but you started saying that, so I'm just going to keep on going. And it is opening my mind to things I didn't know I could open my mind to.
Casey, all I have to say is, welcome to the other side.
It's incredible, Alex.
I've lived two lives. One of them is before Cozy Earth, and one is after.
Which is right now.
That's right. We're talking Cozy Earth. They make incredible, soft, lovely, temperature-controlled bedding and cozy wear.
Cozy Earth makes the best clothes I think I've ever touched, that have ever touched my skin.
Casey, I'm right there with you.
It's soft, it's breathable, it's temperature regulated, it looks good, it feels good, which makes it good.
And how about this for good? All of their products come with a 100-night sleep trial and a 10-year warranty. So if for some completely batshit reason you don't love these sheets, you can return them.
Now, Alex, right around the corner is Mother's Day. If you haven't already done something, which you should have,
yeah,
now's your moment. Go buy your mom some Cozy Earth, because it is the thing that will help her sleep at night. It's the thing that will help keep her comfortable at all moments of her life. And that's what you want for your mom.
So she isn't up all night thinking about what a disappointment her children are.
Exactly, because they didn't get her Cozy Earth. You don't want to be on that level.
Well, Casey, here's some exciting news. All Completely Arbitrary listeners get 35% off at CozyEarth.com with promo code TREES. Again, that's promo code TREES, T-R-E-E-S, for 35% off at Cozy Earth. So get yourself cozy. Get your mom cozy. Hell, get your dad cozy and your friends cozy.
Yeah, it doesn't have to stop there, you know?
Make the earth cozy with Cozy Earth.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
What's up, Fungal Associates? No, this is not an ad. If anything, it's an ad for the podcast you're listening to, Completely Arbitrary.
Go download at your local podcast provider.
I thought you were about to say library.
I should have. I panicked. I was like, how do you download these things? Who does this?
It's through Steve Jobs or something.
You know, that's true. I think some people listen to it on computers the old-fashioned way.
That would blow my mind.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Pretty sure.
Casey.
Either way.
Well, hi, I'm Alex Croson.
And I'm Casey Clapp.
And this podcast is Completely Arbitrary. If you're listening for the first time, welcome.
Hi. Also, this is a very exciting time for you to start. This is in between season 2 and season 3, our spring 21 and our summer 21 collections.
That's right. In this weird episode, this midweek episode, this bi-week.
Yeah, it's like they're all midweek, essentially.
Yeah, that's true.
Sorry.
You are going to be hearing this thing you're hearing now, which is us introducing what you're going to be hearing.
Yep.
That needed explaining, right?
Yes, it did. I was confused.
And you're going to be hearing the season 3 trailer, so you can find out what season 3 is all about. And you will be hearing an unlocked episode from our Patreon.
The vaults are open, Alex.
That's right. And it is What is a Tree? It was the first in our What Is series. It is a sprawling masterpiece of tree dictionarium.
It's a magnus opus, I would say. It was the single greatest thing we've ever done. We haven't even come close since.
I think it may be your greatest work.
I think you're right. I actually, I think I'm probably going to retire.
Oh.
Yeah. At the top of my game. Yeah, you know, that kind of thing.
We maybe should have talked about this off mic.
I didn't realize that you're recording. I thought we were just chatting.
My heart drops because that means I've got a whole season of this show to record myself.
Have a good time. I'll leave you notes.
Now that's a good sitcom premise. Absolutely not.
Absolutely not de portrary. Anyway, so welcome. We're going to be doing this, releasing this Patreon episode. If you are interested in hearing more content like this, I recommend that you go over to the Patreon, sign up, and then you can get access to these this content, these extra episodes. Specifically, we have a whole series on what is a this or that or something else.
That's
what
right.
What do we cover, Alex?
We do tree.
Yeah.
We do bark.
Uh-huh.
We do leaf.
That's right.
And we do
soil. That's right. And then we do a couple other things that are coming down the pike as well.
Yeah, we have lots of Q&A episodes that are patron exclusive.
Yeah, so who asked those questions?
Patrons.
That's right. It's exclusive.
That was such a simple question. I thought it was a trick question.
Not this time.
So if you want to join our Patreon and support the podcast, it helps Casey and I just tremendously, more than you'll ever know. Mm-hmm. Casey, we also have the Cone of the Month Club.
That's true. That's another tier at the Patreon.
That's right. That's $10 a month. You get, basically, we hire independent artists to illustrate a different cone every single month. We print them on stickers.
Yes, slaps, I believe, is the term you're using these
yes.
days.
Yes, which I found out that I did not create. Just another appropriation.
Wow, yeah, from just someone else. I'm sure I was kind of surprised you thought of that. I'm sorry. I should have let you down easy.
I thought my friend Kyle had thought of it, and I was just ignorant. But yeah, we print them onto stickers through Sticker Ninja, a local Portland stickery, and we send them out to you in a cute little envelope with a cute little info card every month. That's $10 a month, and it's like a fantastic way to support the podcast, and you get these bonus episodes. It's a lot of fun for
exactly.
everybody.
You get cool stickers, slaps, sorry.
Yes.
Sorry,
get some sick slaps.
Yeah. Well, anywho, so enjoy this bonus episode. However, check back next week for the first installment of this third season.
Yep.
Classic, completely arbitrary, where we're going to go dive into a bunch of really cool trees.
That's right. That's patreon.com/arbitrarypod. That's ARBORTRARY pod. And here's the trailer for season 3. We'll see you soon.
Goodbye.
What's up, Fungal Associates? My name is Alex Croson.
And I'm Casey Clapp.
And this is Completely Arbitrary Season 3
Classic. We got that right.
That was really good. We didn't even rehearse that.
No. It's an innate ability for us, Alex.
We're back from our world tour. And doesn't it feel great to be home, Casey?
It does feel great to be home. I'm excited. I'm finding a bunch of trees. We have a great repertoire ready.
That's right. We're talking about some trees that listeners have been requesting since day one.
Yes, that's true. Sorry for the wait.
And some trees that I wanted to cover and some trees that you wanted to cover.
Everybody gets a little bit of something here. It's really nice.
That's right. That's why it's completely arbitrary. Classic. And all of it comes with a shiny new theme song.
It's so funky.
And as always, it'll be completely arbitrary.
You have to get the arbor in there.
Arbitrary.
That way people know this is an arbitrary.
Hey, let me ask you this. You ever taken a walk and just felt inspired? Maybe you discovered your new favorite restaurant, or popped into the library and found a book that you really wanted to read, or you're like, hey, I think this car dealership used to be a Taco Bell. Well, there's a podcast about this kind of thing now with comedian and actor Alan McLeod, one of the funniest guys. It's called Walking About. It's a new podcast that treks into the simple joy of walking and its connections to health, history, creativity, and of course, community. In each episode, Alan invites a friend to share a little stroll and see where the sidewalk takes him. Alan McLeod has guests including Mike Mitchell, Spoon Man, Spoon Nation for Life. You got Colton Dunn. You got Janet Varney, Eva Anderson, Whitmer Thomas, Gabrus, Ed Begley Jr., Catherine Spears, Andy Richter, and of course, Burger Boy, Nick Weiger. Some of the funniest people. You know this podcast is going to be an absolute hoot. Maybe you could even listen to it while you're taking your walks. So lace up your podcasting shoes and listen to Walking About out now, wherever you get your pods.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to, Casey, our inaugural...
I love that word.
Patreon episode.
Patreon! First off, thank you, everyone who is listening to this right now, because you have supported us in a way that is really, really sweet.
And gosh,
I I don't know what to say.
I just want to call out a few random names that'll make a few people feel special randomly. Thank you, Megan.
Jennifer.
Hey, Jack. Thanks a lot.
Also, Albert, I think, is out there.
Mm-hmm.
Dude... Rock on.
Yeah, thanks a lot, guys. Just the four of you and everybody else.
And all the rest of you.
Case, hi.
What's up, Alex?
Oh, not a whole lot. I'm really excited for this new format, because these Patreon episodes, maybe we don't have to say this explicitly, but sure. I like, you know, shining a light on things. It's sort of my vibe. I am...
That's like the cherubic. Angels, like, you know, you're opening up the... I'll stop.
The heavens.
Thank you. Yeah, like lights shining through.
One of my favorite things to see driving through the Willamette Valley Gorge. What is it called?
I don't know.
The gorge.
There's two different things you just brought up.
No. The gorge.
Yeah, we just call it the Columbia River Gorge.
The Columbia River Gorge. Jesus.
Yes.
I've lived here my whole life. Come on.
It's pathetic.
One of the things I love seeing is when you're coming westbound.
Yeah.
And you like... You see the side of the gorge and like the light shining through a cloud.
Oh yeah!
My word.
Ugh, it's great. Like it's that. Like the sunbeams coming through is what you're talking about.
Yeah, man, it's insane.
I agree.
Well, this is our first Patreon episode, so yep. With these ones, we're going a little loosey goosey,
a little off the chain here.
Kick your feet up, you know.
Take your shoes off.
Yeah, take your shoes off, Case.
Done. All right, it's only one shoe.
You know. Put a log on the fire. Cuddle up.
Cuddle up. Grab yourself a nice cold ale.
Yeah,
beer.
I got myself a Zevia.
A Zevia? What is a Zevia?
It's a soda sweetened with the stevia extract.
Oh, I got you. All right. I just have water.
I'm going to have a bunch of people now message me telling me it causes cancer and stuff.
Ooh, don't message us that.
Yeah, I don't want to know it.
Well, what are we talking about today?
Well,
I think I know.
Yeah, well, I hope so. This first episode, very plainly, is called, What is a Tree?
What is a tree, indeed?
So we're going to talk pretty kind of briefly about just what the heck is a tree. I feel like that was a good place to start for us.
Yeah, I think so. Obviously, we're doing a tree podcast. And, you know, for those of you who are here, you're clearly dedicated fungal associates.
That's right.
And a lot of things, like, you know, we just started a tree podcast, and I think what we were talking about, I know I've brought this up to you, Alex, plenty of times, is, you know, what is exactly a tree? What is this podcast about?
Yeah.
And we can start, like, from the, you know, a furthest extreme as to what a tree is, which is like the classic, like an elm tree, an oak tree, a pine tree, you know, mm-hmm. these kinds of things. And that's like, okay, cool. That's a tree. That seems obvious. There's no question about the definition there or what that means, what we are referring to. But what happens when you get smaller? What happens when the tree has several stems? What happens when it's a weird looking thing that looks like a tree, but is it a tree? So what is exactly the definition that we're working with here?
Yeah, I think it's one of those questions that, like, I would never think to ask.
Yeah.
Like, you see trees in your everyday life and you're like, I've never stopped to really ask my, what is a tree?
Right.
I know it when I see it, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And that, I think, is the interesting sort of, it's a hard thing to define, you know, to say, okay, so I know it when I see it. So yeah. Now how do I define it? How do I put that into words?
Right. And to start, Casey.
Yes.
I would really love to hear
I thought you were going to ask my singing voice.
I would really love to hear a concerto.
Sorry.
I was ready for you to go further.
I couldn't think of a word. I just started making sounds. And I was like, I think I sound like Dory talking to the whales.
Whale. Yeah, you did a bit. I would love to hear the, whenever I want somebody to explain something really simply, I ask them to explain it in a tweet format.
Oh,
you know, I don't know if it's 140 characters, 140. I don't know if it's still 140.
I've never tweeted before.
And the only time I've tweeted was way back in the day.
Yeah, I think the only, I should take that back. I've only tweeted because we've put it on our Instagram. So I just slide that over and say, yes, post on our Twitter.
Right.
And
yes.
Then, but you know what all it does? It just goes on Twitter and says, the arbitrary pod posted something on Instagram.
Yeah.
So
that doesn't count.
I don't know who listens to us on Twitter. Sorry.
But also, another way of asking this is my friend Kyle gave me this little one. It's like, explain it as if you were explaining it to a smart 10-year-old.
Yes. There you go.
So a little tweet version of what is a tree. Take it away.
Okay. So a tree is a perennial woody compartmentalized plant that grows generally to have a height of about 15 or so feet minimum, and generally one single stem,
okay,
and then has most of the foliage up on top of that stem.
Cool.
So a way to say it to a 10-year-old of any intelligence level is it's a bush with a stick up the middle.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, and now I have to say, so a lot of this comes from a discussion from the book The Tree by Colin Tudge, which is another one of the books. I didn't include it in our research episode, or I'm sorry, our resource episode, because it's a great resource, but it's not like a resource where you're like, oh, what's that tree? I'm going to go look at this resource to figure it out.
For someone looking for a list of those resources, it's in the question and answer section of the episode of The Don Redwood.
Yes, correct. So, but The Tree by Colin Tudge is a book that is about the natural history of trees. So right at the very beginning, he does the same conversation that we're having.
Oh,
so
cool.
I encourage everyone who's interested, if you just want a really fascinating, well-written, awesome book, go get That Tree. It's thorough and it's wonderful. And he starts it out and says, okay, so what are we talking about? And then he uses, like, you know, well, I guess it's just really a bush with a stick up the middle. So my definition comes from a couple other mentors, from coworkers and bosses that I've had, and presentations that they've given, and just, you know, things I've osmosed through working with them. It was a company up in Seattle that I worked for, a guy named Scott Baker and Sean Dugan were the two owners of this company. And basically what we talked about is, or what he always wanted to make sure that separates sort of what we call trees from other things, is that they are perennial, which means they come back every single year. They are constantly, they don't die back from to the ground and then come out. So they're woody, and perennial just means they come, you know, once a year, or, you know, once every whatever, you know, time period.
Are you saying that trees are perennial?
They are, yes. So there is herbaceous perennials, and then there's woody perennials. An herbaceous perennial is a plant that dies back to the roots and then comes back out every single year. So an example of a herbaceous perennial would be
potato.
Yeah, I think that would work. Yeah.
Okay.
Potatoes are a little bit yes, you're right, but they also grow down in like the Andes natively. So they're not like something that would, you know, grow up and then die. But like a tulip would be a great example, or a daffodil, or, you know, 100 other different herbs that for some reason none are popping into my head right now. Gladiolus, a lot of the garden variety plants that you plant out there, they grow up and they're big and beautiful and they have big flowers. They go to seed, and then fall comes and they kind of die back, and then you cut off those dead stems. And then the next year, poof, you get a bunch of new plants that come up from that same root system.
Okay, the roots stay.
Correct.
We just can't see them.
Exactly. Yeah, they're just underground. They're just wintering over in their dormancy.
Yeah, potato is also a weird example because potatoes grow underground.
Yeah, right. But the rest of the flower, or the rest of the plant, is above ground.
Yeah, yeah. So, okay.
Well. But yeah, so it is. So they're perennial. So they will grow, and a woody perennial doesn't die back. Maybe it dies back in the sense that it like loses its leaves,
right? Like a deciduous tree.
Exactly. Or it, or rather, not rather. Just, oh gosh.
Oh,
not
Casey.
Or,
We can't let it fall apart now.
I know. Listen, start it over.
This content's behind a paywall.
Oh, fuck. Yeah, there's no editing on this either.
No, I refuse.
So you also have the woody perennial side of it. Means that it is hard and lignified tissue. So it grows up, lignified. I'll get that in a second.
Thank you.
Don't worry about it. But basically, it just means that it's hard wood rather than soft, herbaceous plant material.
I see.
So take a dahlia. You familiar with the dahlia?
I've certainly heard of it.
Yeah. So it's just a little herb plant, herbaceous plant rather.
I'm going to look it up.
No, go for it. So herbaceous just means that it has no woody lignified parts. And lignin is another chemical composition, another kind of protein component of wood. So cellulose is the thing that all plants are made of. So cellulose is a long strand of different sugars and starches put together that the plants make through photosynthesis. And then that is the tissue that makes up wood. I say this in plant tissue. I'm using air quotes right now.
Yeah.
So in wood, you have cellulose and lignin. In just about every plant, you'll still have cellulose. It's just not extremely strong. You just get these really tough outer walls in the plant cell, and those hold up an herbaceous plant.
Mm.
Whereas in a woody plant, they add in lignin, and then that lignin is what creates the strength that keeps the, so strong like wood, where it stays up all the time.
Are there woody plants that aren't classified as trees?
Yeah, shrubs.
Oh, sure.
Or vines, things like that.
Like a rhododendron, like we saw. Okay.
A rose is another good example.
I see.
It gets a woody lignified tissue, but it doesn't do other things that would make it into a tree that we're going to talk about here coming up.
Awesome. Thanks.
So they're perennial. They're also compartmentalized. So if you hit into a tree, then I'm gonna take this with a grain of salt because we're getting into the really nuanced things here.
Good.
But so a compartmentalized thing is I use the example of the Titanic because everyone's seen that movie, and you remember when the ocean or the they were trying to run, they hit the iceberg and water's flowing into all these compartments in the base of the ship.
Yeah.
And so they started closing off different compartments to try and keep the water out and keep the ship afloat. That is the same thing that trees do, but imagine that the water is a fungal organism trying to grow into the wood, and then the tree has to close off all these different compartments, but each cell is its own compartment.
Right.
So it has to just close off all these different cells and basically say, you're on your own, and then leave those other cells basically to die.
An example of this, I think you mentioned in your ologies episode, dendrology of the ologies by Allie Ward. Go look it up. Listen to it if you haven't already.
It's free. You don't have to pay for that.
That's right. you mentioned in the redwoods where they carved a big archway out of a tree to drive through?
Yeah, that's
so
right.
That tree compartmentalized that wound.
Yes. Well, it's tried. I don't think it'll ever actually get there because it'll take so long to fully, because it has compartmentalized it on the inside, but there are four different walls of compartmentalization, again with air quotes. It's just a descriptor term where you have one wall that stops the fungus from going up and down the tree. You have another wall that closes it off going radially around the tree. And then you have another one that stops it from going tangentially into the middle of the tree, going through it towards the center pith.
Okay.
I think I got those terms right, but I'm not going to promise that.
Okay.
Anyway, those are the three walls. The fourth wall is when the tree actually physically closes that off and grows new tissue over the top of the wound.
Mm.
So the redwood that has the hole through it, it's compartmentalized inside that area, the first three, but it is probably all the time trying to close up that wound that people are driving through all the time. So that is another thing that would make it a tree. And the other thing is just it has to be generally, we would define it softly as growing approximately 15 or so feet tall.
Okay.
And then having more or less one stem. Because if you have a shrub that's maybe 15 feet tall, it's like, wow, that's a huge shrub. And it has 30 different stems that are all growing up and kind of falling over. The Western hazelnut is a really good example of that. Which is, the scientific name is Corylus cornuta, variety Californica. And
wow.
Yeah. They're beautiful, and some of those can get 15 feet tall, but they have like 30 different stems. None of them are really that big, and it constantly just grows up new things from the base. Rather than, as opposed to a Douglas fir that is just one single stem that's growing up and has this big canopy way up above the ground, you know, so significantly.
The stem is just the thing that goes into the root, the roots.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so that's basically it, you know. Okay. In the broadest sense, it's a stick with a bunch of bush off the top.
Bunch of foliage.
Yeah, bunch of gosh dang foliage. So
interesting. Okay, so that's why, like, and I'm using this reference twice now, but a rhododendron,
yeah,
which looks very tree like
it does, yeah,
but it has more than one stem, yeah, and it doesn't grow to be 15 feet.
Yeah, precisely. Okay. A lot of times it branches really low to the ground.
Yeah,
comes
yeah,
out
yeah.
with not maybe there's one stem that physically goes from the ground up a foot or two, and then it breaks into a bunch of branches that sort of become smaller and smaller as it creates this little globe. But very few rhododendrons will get more than 15 feet tall. Actually, our native one here will, but it's pretty rare.
But like a Japanese maple,
yeah,
which I've seen have one stem,
uh-huh,
but they also grow very low, right?
Yes, they stay small. So that would be considered a small tree.
That's the reason they're a tree, is because they have one stem.
Isn't it? Now, here is where it really is getting curious, though. If you have a big rhododendron that's like 70 years old that looks really similar to a small Japanese maple, what's the difference?
I don't know.
There's no difference. That's the thing. It just happens to be that most of the time, this is a shrubby, smaller thing. And most of the time, this is just a little bit bigger as a tree. And so this is kind of getting into the nuance of it all. It's like, okay, if you have three stems, you're still a tree. If you have four stems, five stems, six,
you're 10. Pushing it.
Exactly. And so all of a sudden, the more stems you have, the less tree-like you are. The more, lower to the ground, the less tree-like you are. But you could be a small tree that grows way out. The vine maple is another tree that grows really similar to the Japanese maple.
Mm.
And they kind of fill the same niche in their different forest types. But they're just small trees. The vine maple actually sometimes grows not even like a tree at all. It just kind of grows almost laterally through the forest at like maybe 8 or so feet.
Yeah.
And just grows and just takes up whatever possible light space it can find and then just puts out a couple leaves right there.
The vine maple is really pretty.
It's one of my favorites. It's so gorgeous.
It looks like, it looks like like one of those, what is the African tree in the savannah, in the Sahara?
Oh, an acacia.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It looks a bit like, because it has like these big tables of leaves.
Yeah, exactly.
Sort of staggered.
The only difference being that one grows in way in the understory of our massive forests here in the U.S. or the Western U.S. And then the acacias grow in an open savanna where they're doing the same thing, but they're doing it just to get as much light as possible.
They're going for surface area.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they can't reach the height of a Douglas fir.
Yeah.
Just they have to use what they can.
Yeah, precisely. I mean, they theoretically could, but the problem is they'd have to push a bunch of water up really high.
Mm.
And in the dry savannas, it's just not as efficient to push water up really high than it is to kind of just keep it low. You just don't have to use as much energy.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Which one day, maybe we'll do an episode where we talk about how plants move water.
Yeah.
There's a whole YouTube video on it that I have to watch again and again because the physics of it are astounding.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah. But so the other thing about this, and so the other side of what makes a tree is the physiology of the actual plant itself.
Okay.
So remember how I said that trees are compartmentalizers?
Mm-hmm.
So let me get into that a little bit. So there are four main organs on a tree. There's...
I know one of them.
Oh, what is it? Oh my gosh. I was like, oh, you're so excited. What is happening?
I maybe know two of them.
Ooh, begin.
Phylum? Tell me.
Phloem?
Phloem.
Yes. You're not wrong, but you're not exactly right.
Okay.
So that's not quite an organ in a strict sense. That's just like the vascular system.
Oh, okay.
So if you can consider all of your veins an organ, you can. But I don't think that's quite accurate.
I see. It's more of a system.
Yeah, exactly. And it's also a system built of just a million cells rather than like a conduit system.
Okay.
So rather than think of it like a billion little pipes, it is more or less just a bunch of cells that are osmosing and moving things through them. And then some of them turn into like vessels that have, their only job is to move water up and down or something like
that. Oh, that's what moves water is the phloem?
Yeah. The phloem actually goes down. So the phloem is what takes all of the synthetic material, the photosynthetic material that the plant leaves make. And then the phloem transfers that down from the leaves and the canopy down through the rest of the tree to the roots.
Cute.
And then the xylem is on the inside, and the xylem is what takes nutrients dissolved in water from the ground, absorbs it from the roots, and then pushes that up through the rest of the tree.
Wow.
So the vessels and the tracheids, which are these cells that live inside the wood of a tree, those are on the inside where the xylem is. And the best way I remember is that xylem is the old Greek word for wood. So It's on the inside next to the wood, and then the phloem flows down on the outside.
Is that where the word xylophone comes from?
I don't know. That's a great question. I bet you it is. I don't know. No one's ever asked me that before.
People are probably irritated at me interrupting you to tell us the four parts of a tree.
Get out
But
of
I have
here.
One more guess.
Yeah.
Is it cambium? Is that one of them?
No, the cambium is the phloem and the xylem. Like that's all. That's like the broader.
That is the cambium.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, cambium is made up of these things.
I'll hush. You talk.
Oh gosh, never hush. So the four main organs are a little bit more like when I'm going to say this, you're going to be like, oh, okay, I see. But it doesn't, you don't think about it. The roots, the stems, the leaves, and the reproductive parts.
Oh, I could remember that.
Exactly. They're not that difficult. And some people will add in certain other bits to it. And, you know, the definitions are somewhat fluid. But I think the easiest way to describe it is you have those four main constituents. And the reason that they're four and the reason that they're separated is that the roots physiologically are different from the stems, which are physiologically different than the leaves, are physiologically different from the reproductive parts.
Yeah, they are really all like really different things.
And they usually don't overlap. But you know, the one thing I tell everyone when I do like a tree ID course is everything I'm going to tell you right now, there's going to be some exception.
I see.
So inevitably, what I'm going to say is someone could be like, well, what about this? And I was like, okay, that's the one.
Oh, they will.
Yeah. So, in fact, if you do, we're going to return all your money and kick you off our Patreon.
Banned.
No emails. No, just kidding. Send 1,000.
Yeah. We love to hear from you.
So the roots, they grow in the ground. They grow down and out, not very deep, usually in the top 2 to 3 feet of soil.
Right.
At least around here, on average. Not on average, but like 80%. And some of them will be a little bit deeper. Some will have tap roots. You know, there's, like I said, exceptions to everything.
That was a shocker to learn on your ologies episode.
Really?
That roots grow out, not down.
I love that. That's one of the like quickest myths that I think people are like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah. And especially even with the taller ones. And I actually, some people have written into us about it, and I've had to be like, well, so it's not 100% accurate, because a lot of people don't necessarily conceptualize roots in the same way, where you have roots, which are those big structural things that are woody that hold the tree in place.
Mm-hmm.
But then 90% of the roots are not those big gigantic ones. They're actually little teeny tiny root hairs that do all the actual absorbing of nutrients and water.
And they send it to the bigger root, which sends it to the bigger root.
Exactly.
The stem.
Yeah, precisely.
Cool.
So they do not put on annual rings, but they do grow annually. So if you cut a branch, you can count how old that branch is. You cut a tree, you can count how old that tree is. You cut a root, it's all diffused. You can't actually see a new ring that grows on every year.
How come?
That's a very good question. I don't really know why.
Okay. Just grow in a different way.
They just grow in a different way, yeah.
Okay.
And they also don't necessarily stop growing the same way that the upper canopy does. So the upper canopy has a lot more, it gets affected by weather and things a lot more. So it just kind of like pulls in all of its delicate parts and sits there and weathers the storm of wintertime or heat or whatever it is. Then when conditions are more favorable, it puts its new leaves out, starts photosynthesizing again. Whereas the roots, especially like here in Oregon, or the west side, a lot of times it's just not that harsh of a temperature. It's like, oh, well, now it's in the 40s. It's not good for the leaves necessarily, but the roots are actually in like this 55 degree soil. And so they're just like, well, there's some water here. I'm just going to grow over them and get some water. I'm going to go do this. I'm going to do that. And they're just still kind of cooking ever so slowly.
Interesting.
So you have the roots.
That's why the roots don't die in the winter.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they're in the earth.
And exactly. And much of the time, they're actually still still doing stuff.
Interesting.
So a lot of trees, if you plant them in the fall, they'll spend the whole winter putting out little roots. And then during the spring, they'll start doing the upper canopy stuff. And then you'll have a tree that is really well established, especially if you give it some water during our really harsh, dry summers.
Do roots like store up nutrients during the winter?
Yeah.
And then in the spring, they like eject them into the stem?
Yes. That's how you get some syrup from sugar maples.
Whoa, what? How? Yeah. What?
So sugar maples, they, during the springtime, when the temperature during the daytime is above freezing, but then at night is freezing for like a couple of specific weeks in like, I think it's March over there is when that really starts happening. Then the trees actively start pushing up sap from the roots where it's stored in the roots, and they just start pushing it up the stem of the tree. So theoretically, every single little twig will expand ever so slightly because it gets just a little bit more saturated with these sugars. And the reason that they have so many sugars in them is A, because that's what trees produce in photosynthesis, is sugars. And these little sugars end up causing the sap to basically be somewhat, what is the word I'm looking for? Antifreeze-like. They don't freeze, even though the temperature outside is a little bit less or is lower than freezing.
Oh, the way that you would, if you put like a sugary, help me out. Like if you put vodka in the freezer, it doesn't freeze.
Well, similar, but that's just because vodka is, it's an alcohol rather than water.
I see.
Where water freezes at the freezing point, 100%.
Okay.
But if you add in salts, if you add in other dissolved chemicals, you can change the either boiling point or the freezing point of water. So like you throw salts down in, over in the east, that actually all it's doing is it's lowering the temperature for the freezing point for the water. So then the water doesn't freeze, it melts, and now you've cleared all the ice off of the road.
Same way putting water in a pot of boiling, or excuse me, putting water in a pot of boiling water.
Yeah, yeah.
Figure that one out.
Duh.
Putting salt in a pot of boiling water makes it boil faster.
Actually, it makes it boil at a higher temperature. That's actually, I believe, I had a chemist tell me. I think, no, you're right, but in the opposite direction.
Oh.
Where it raises the temperature that the water has to boil at.
I see.
So then the water is hotter, so then when you put your pasta in, it boils, or it gets done a little bit faster because the water's a little bit hotter.
I see.
I think that's the case. You could be right. I think I took this chemistry course like 10 years ago.
I'm going to say you're probably right. It's also good for seasoning. There.
Yeah, it tastes delicious. but yeah, that's exactly it. So they don't freeze because they basically have like these antifreeze chemicals in there. And then the buds start to expand ever so slowly as all of those stored nutrients and stuff in the roots start getting pushed out to the rest of the tree. Then when temperatures and the photo period is correct, meaning there's enough light in the day, it's like, boom, the trees are triggered, the buds pop, and then they start putting out their new leaves and their new flowers.
Wow.
Yeah. So you have your first organ. We haven't even got past the roots. Oh my God. The second organ is the stem and the branches.
Yes.
That's what creates the other thing that a lot of people will use to define a tree, where you have what's called secondary xylem, which means it grows out and puts on that annual ring every single year.
Yeah.
So trees grow in two different ways with what's called a meristem. So there's a meristem cell at the tip of each twig inside that bud, and that one is what elongates the tree, makes it taller, wider, all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
And then there's the secondary xylem, and that's the meristems that are in the cambium. Exactly. No one can see, but Alex just like...
I made a widening motion.
Exactly. You're exactly right.
Yeah.
Okay. And so the widening, every single year, there's basically meristems, which are the same thing as stem cells in animals and humans, where they're undifferentiated cells that then, for whatever reason, their genes trigger this, trigger that, and then one becomes phloem, one becomes xylem, some become bark, and then all of a sudden the tree goes... Bloop, 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 grows one ring bigger.
Wow.
So a tree should, by certain definitions, have that secondary xylem. That tree should grow out every single year at least one time. Other plants that we call trees do not do that, like the palms. This is why people are like, palm trees are not trees. Palms, rather, are not trees.
Because they don't grow rings?
They don't. They have bundles of vessels and things that transport nutrients and water. I'm sorry. Nutrients and water from the ground up, and then have the same kind of piping system takes their photosynthate, all those sugars, and passes that to the rest of the tree.
Okay.
But palm trees do not grow wider. They will sometimes put on maybe a few more bundles, so they kind of will slowly over time expand. Uh-huh. But if you've ever seen one, it's the same like cylinder size, yes, more or less, all the way 60 whatever feet up in the air, where they just have one big gigantic bud at the very top. And that bud will then bloop, put on a little bit more growth. It'll grow a little bit taller, and then put out new leaves, and then the old leaves are on the bottom on the outside, and then they fall off, and then you get that like dead sort of mane of dead leaves, uh-huh, underneath it. So
when a palm plant,
yeah,
comes out of the ground, and let's say it's 12 inches in diameter.
Uh-huh.
Somebody asked us to give measurements in imperial as
oh,
well.
Or
what's the other?
No, yeah, it's like we're in imperial, in metric.
Metric, yeah.
Yeah.
We'll get around to that.
Sorry. this is an American podcast, okay?
Oh, no.
No, it's not. You're right. We should. I just forget about it.
Yeah, we just forget. Sorry.
Yeah, we'll figure it out.
Yeah, we'll get around to making that a habit. Not but say a palm comes out of the ground 12 inch. It comes out of the ground, yeah, 12 inches wide.
Yeah.
So just like a big bulb of...
It kind of is, yeah. And
that's so
it,
weird. Yeah, I can't even fathom that.
It's a very strange concept. Now, it does grow a little bit wider, especially the beginning when it's young. So it has the term is a dicot versus a monocot, which is a dicotyledon. Yeah, versus a monocotyledon. And that is what's referring to the leaves that come out, the very first two or single leaf that comes out. So if you've ever seen like a blade of grass grow out from a seed, it's one leaf that comes out.
Mm-hmm.
Then if you are looking at any other tree that is a dicot, it has two little leaves that come out each time.
Okay.
And those two little leaves will pop out, and then the rest of the tree will continue to grow from there. And that's like one of those like way early fundamental things where it's like that you try to put things in different classifications. There's monocots and dicots. Grasses, yucca, palms, those are all monocots. Oaks and lindens and all the rest, those are all dicots.
Got it.
So as the that little first cotyledon comes up and starts growing, it then creates, it gets a little bit bigger at the base because it's just putting on all this new growth and it's really just starting to establish itself. But then as it grows taller and taller, that stuff in the middle will not grow bigger and bigger every single year.
I see.
Just the same like a redwood would. Every single surface on a redwood stem or branch or twig. Wow, I just burped. I'm so sorry.
Next time you got to do it into the mic.
I'm going to. That way everyone can hear what I'm doing. this is what you guys are paying for. You love it, don't you? I almost made him spit out his stevia.
I almost did an actual spit take.
Oh, man. So basically, every single surface on a redwood tree is going to get bigger around every single year. Every single, like the main stem, the biggest branch, the smallest twig,
yeah,
all of them. Whereas in the palms, it doesn't do that. They just keep growing up, but not out.
Okay. So if you cut a little, God forbid, cut a little baby branch, a little stem,
yeah,
or a little twig off of a branch of a tree,
yeah,
it has little rings.
It does.
That's so cute.
It's super adorable. And you can actually, you can see how the tree was growing. Like this is a different subject, but the way trees grow is some will put on compression wood on the bottom, and it's getting compressed because it's on the bottom of the branch and the branch is like pushing down.
Oh.
If I could like show you a branch, I could explain this a lot more.
Okay.
But it's just the forces where you have compression versus tension versus torsion, that kind of thing.
Okay.
So you can see if you do cut a branch in a cross section like mm-hmm. that, the very center, the pith of that branch will not be centered most of the time.
Oh, because it's like weighted down?
Yeah, exactly.
So it's kind of like an offset.
Yes. So the tree, in order to hold that branch up, if it's a conifer, it puts on compression wood on the bottom side of that branch to push the branch up.
Wow.
And so you'll have big fat rings on the bottom and little skinny rings on the top.
That's so smart.
If it's an oak tree or a broadleaf tree, it's going to do the exact opposite, and it puts tension wood on the top and holds it by pulling rather than putting more wood on the bottom and pushing it up with
that's
compression.
That's so sick.
Isn't that fascinating?
That is great. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's go back to
the last two.
Yes. Right.
Organs.
That's all stem and roots.
Yes, exactly. So, and the stem of course has the cambium that you were talking about earlier and produces the bark.
Yeah.
So the last two are the leaves and the, flowering parts, the reproductive organs.
Okay.
So the last, the leaves, they have obviously a completely different morphology where they pop out and they have what most of the time, generally, our next episode, are we going to talk about leaves? Is that the next one?
Maybe.
Ah, cool.
Maybe we just kind of dive into it now.
Oh gosh, I'm excited.
It's a part of a tree.
This is
what is a tree?
Well, we'll dive into it and we'll just keep moving through.
Yeah.
So a leaf of a tree is where the trees put in all of the chlorophyll, and chlorophyll is the part of a plant that produces takes sunlight and sun energy, uses it to create sugars in the process of photosynthesis.
Shit, can you say that one more time?
Yeah.
There's just like one too many things for me to keep track of.
The leaves are probably one of the most fascinating parts of plants. Well, maybe the flowers. A leaf is physiologically different because instead of just being sort of a pipe that takes things up or down, uh-huh. The leaf and the leaf blade, what makes it green is that they have these cells the organelles, which are organs inside the cells.
Chlorophyll.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Rather, they're called chloroplasts.
Oh.
I've been saying too many blah, blah, blah. The arsonist has oddly shaped feet.
You need a palate cleanser.
Yeah, I do. I'm going to grab
like
some water.
A sorbet.
Yeah, you're right. So there are organelles, the organs inside the cell, that's called chloroplasts.
Okay.
The chloroplasts have individual chemicals in it called chlorophyll. Chlorophyll is a pigment, which is what we see, and that's what makes them green.
Got it.
So the pigment chlorophyll is capturing all the different wavelengths of light except for green. It reflects out the green back out to our eyes.
That's why it's green.
Exactly. But it absorbs the oranges and the reds and the yellows and the blues and all those other colors. Those get absorbed. They then, the cells themselves use that energy, like the photons from light, to blast apart different, and take an oxygen, or it splits oxygen and carbon from CO2. And it takes the carbon and adds it to water, creates a simple sugar, and it releases the oxygen back out to the air.
Okay.
Complicated, right?
And it feeds the tree the sugar?
Exactly. So it takes that sugar, which I believe is, I think it's glucose initially, and it takes those sugars, makes long chains of it, and then those chains become sucrose? Yeah, sucrose. There it is. Sucrose and cellulose and hemicellulose and all these other different loses, which are all basically sugars.
So this isn't a perfect analogy,
yeah.
But what I'm hearing is like the leaf is like the fork that puts the food in the mouth that is the stem.
Nah.
Hold for applause.
They are trees and plants are what's called autotrophic. So they're not the fork, they're the food.
The leaf?
The leaf, yeah.
Is the food? It's making the food,
it
right?
It makes the food.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not quite the fork. It would be if you hold up a spoon and just by holding the spoon in sunlight, it fills with soup. Then yes.
Yeah. What do you mean?
Yeah,
that's what happens.
That's how I get soup.
Sunlight soup.
Yeah.
All right. I see. So it is the food. It's making the food. Therefore, it is the food.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Okay,
they are the warehouses. They are what takes the sunlight, combines it with other chemicals, and then they create what is basically a sugar. And then the rest of the trees and other cells will use those sugars and create them. There's a couple other steps we're not going to get into.
Ooh.
Way too chemically in depth.
Okay.
But suffice it to say, they create these sugars, and then the rest of the plant uses those sugars either as storage, as starches in the roots and the stem, and then uses that as production, you know, energy for whatever. Or they actually use it as the building blocks of the cells themselves, i.e. cellulose.
Okay.
Whew. That's a leaf. But the complicated, there's a bunch more that we could talk about with the leaf. Like, for instance, we could talk about the fact that the chloroplasts themselves are independent organisms.
Oh, the pigment?
The pigment. Those
are independent. So they do their own thing?
They have their own DNA.
They just live inside the leaf?
They are called a endosymbiote, I believe this is the term. And I can look that up again.
What the fuck?
So millions and like billions of years ago in the Precambrium, which is like before there was life on land. It was only in the water.
Oh, wow. Okay.
There was this slime, this green, blue-green algae. That blue-green algae was able to photosynthesize and live in the oceans. Then all of a sudden, it got together with some other thing, another, you know, ostensibly the very first plant, in quotes.
Mm.
And that first plant started to move on to land, and it made this symbiotic relationship with this blue-green algae.
What was the blue-green algae called?
Blue-green algae, that's it. There's just broad names, because it doesn't exist anymore, because that blue-green algae, and this is like millions and billions of years ago, I don't think billions necessarily. Maybe, actually.
I feel like we should give it a name. Say it again?
Pre-tree.
Okay.
Sorry, that was uninspired, wasn't it? Well,
I was going for more of a human name.
Oh, gotcha. Jim.
Okay.
Jim the blue-green algae.
Jim the blue-green algae.
Well, so basically, it's
Sorry,
a little
Casey.
Bit... Oh, you're fine.
I'm like a bad student.
I need a yardstick so I can whack it over your knuckles every now and then.
Ouch.
Listen!
You're like... I'm like the... One time at U of O, in one of my science classes, I think it was a geology class.
All right.
These two kids were like talking like and making a ruckus, and then the teacher would like stop and look at them and then continue.
Then
10 minutes later they would be making a ruckus again. He'd stop and look, and that happened three times, and then the teacher just exploded.
What did he do?
And he just said, "Get out of my classroom. Oh, go now. You two go."
Holy shit.
And it was like a tense, like, it was like a live leak moment. It was crazy.
Oh my God. That sounds awful.
I feel like one of those kids because I keep trying to like, so it's like, what would you name it though?
At least you're not talking to someone else while I'm talking to you.
Yeah, I'm engaged. I'm just engaged in the wrong way.
I think you're engaged in the perfect way, Alex. So suffice it to say at this moment that that's what leaves do. They create it because millions of years ago, there was this algae that created this symbiotic relationship with some other organism and basically got included into that organism because they basically, it'd be like you and I.
Wow, that's insane.
Yeah, so imagine that I am very good at digging a hole. You are very good at doing something, but you can't dig a hole, but you need a hole dug to do that thing that you're very good at.
Mm-hmm.
You and I partner up. I dig a hole, you fill that hole with whatever. I don't know. My metaphor is pretty shit. But I and you get together, but we have now worked together and our children work together and our children's children work together for so long that I no longer am able to do anything else but dig a hole.
Interesting.
And you no longer even are considered something that can't dig a hole because I have become a part of you. And
Wow. Now
you use me as the thing that digs that hole that you didn't do something with.
And it's still that way?
It is, even so that the independent genes of the chloroplasts no longer exist. They basically have, over time, lost all the other genes to do literally anything but what they do now.
Wow.
It is so mind-blowingly, like, just crazy to think about that these things made such a partnership. It would be like fungus no longer being an independent organism. It just is a part of the roots of a tree.
Right.
Rather than being two different things that then buddy up together.
Are chloroplasts still considered an algae?
No. Now they're considered an organelle. Now they're considered
an organelle of the leaf.
Yes, they are an organ inside the cell of a leaf.
I gotcha. That's really fascinating.
Yeah, same thing. We're not going to get near as into it, but mitochondria, the same thing. But mitochondria are in cells of every living thing that's around. They're the powerhouses of the cells, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they are also considered the same thing, where they think it actually might have been a bacteria or a virus. I can't recall which that. Basically got involved, went into a cell, and all of a sudden started like creating this energy, and the cell's like, yum, I'm going to eat that. And then the cell started living, and they're like, hey, well, why don't you stay for a while? I'll give you everything you need if you turn that into something that I need. And then they just created this symbiotic relationship that got so intensely connected that now if you take out one of those parts, or if you take out one of those things from the other, they each die. They cannot live without the other.
If you somehow removed chloroplast from a leaf, the leaf would die?
And the chloroplast would die.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's kind of a beautiful relationship.
Yeah, right? And we know this because they each have their own individual DNAs. The tree has a DNA. The mitochondria has a DNA. I'm sure if you watch CSI, you've heard maybe mitochondrial DNA.
Yeah.
That's how they figure it out, like what your DNA is. And then they also have different DNA for the old blue-green algae gym.
Casey, let's take a quick break.
Yeah.
Okay, Case, I have one last question about leaves.
All right, shoot.
Why do leaves change color in the fall?
Well, that's a great question.
Why do broad leaves change color in the
right.
fall?
Well, so one thing I should note, just as a quick aside, the way you can tell a leaf, and I think we talked about this with the walnut episode, is a leaf will always have a bud that is just above it. So a leaf is the thing that comes out from the bottom of a bud.
Oh, okay.
It's important to note, because if we are talking about a leaf of a willow tree, it's going to have only one little stem. It's called a petiole. Connects to the base, connects to the twig, comes out, has a leaf blade, done. Whereas if we're talking about the leaf of a Kentucky coffee tree, it actually grows out from that same point directly beneath a bud, but then it splits twice, and it has bipinnately compound leaves, which means that it has one main vein, one main rachis is what it's called, and then it has these sub-rachises that come out, and then it has these sub-ones that come off of that. So each leaflet has leaflets.
When you said, this is the progress I've made, when you said bipinnately compound leaves, I like thought for 3 seconds and I could picture them because
that's
I know what pinnately means or pinnate means, and I know what compound means.
Yes. Honestly, I thought about this a couple times, and if this podcast and this Patreon now, obviously, if it inspires people to go out and like look at trees and actually like see things differently, I'm just going to be, I think I'll just call this my life's work. And the fact that it is like, that you are going from being someone who never really paid attention to trees, not as a fault, just, you know, you were focused on other things.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're just like, oh shit, okay, I'm seeing this, I'm seeing that, you know. Honestly, it's so inspiring to me. One of my dendrology teachers said, after you take this class, you will never see the world the same again.
Right.
And I was like, okay, whatever. And then some of the people in the class, I had already taken a bunch of ID courses, so I was kind of already ready for it. And other people like, yeah, okay, yeah, whatever, I'm sure. And then once you do take it, as you're walking down the street, instead of just seeing these sort of amorphous green things around, all of a sudden you pick out all those individual nuances, and you're like, wait a second, that's a different tree. That's needles. And then all of a sudden the whole world appears instead of, you know, a blob, like an amorphous whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You can pick out, and all of a sudden you feel like you're much more, I want to say involved, but at least in tune with maybe what you're seeing and what's going on around you.
Yeah.
And if that is the side effect for this, you know, silly podcast we're doing, man, I'm just going to be so happy with the way it turned out.
I think it is. I think it has been and will be.
I really appreciate that. Okay. So the last thing of an organ of a tree is the reproductive part.
Oh, wait. I thought you were going to tell me why leaves change color.
God, I totally forgot. I'm sorry. The podcast regrets the error. The reason that they change color, a lot of trees, if they're deciduous, they're going to change color. But there are two different theories, and so far I haven't been able to figure out or find research that says 100% one or the other. A lot of times, these are questions that no one really thinks about. They never really cared. You know, it wasn't going to advance our technology, so it didn't get a lot of research. But now people are like, okay, I got this question asked. Like, we don't actually know what's going on. Let's try and figure this out.
Yeah.
And what they have found is one theory is that as you take away, so nitrogen in leaves is a really important chemical component of any of the organelles in other cells, especially chloroplasts and chlorophyll. Thank you. I was like, which is the other one? So nitrogen is a really important chemical, and you can't get it in the soil very easily for a couple different reasons. We're not going to worry about that right now.
Okay.
So it is kind of a limiting factor. So trees will take all of the different organelles and all the things that have some useful component in them from the leaves, and instead of just letting the leaves fall and hit the ground, like, whatever, I don't care anymore, they will extract all those different chemicals and break them down and store them in the stem and the roots. So as you take away the green pigment, there are other things in the cells that have other pigments in them. So you take away the green pigment, then all of a sudden the colors change, because now instead of having green be reflected and all the other colors absorbed, all of a sudden now reds and oranges start to appear, because those are no longer getting absorbed by the chlorophyll. They're getting reflected by other pigments in the leaves.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's like carotenoids and flavonoids, all these weird names for different things. Cyan, the blues, S or C-Y-A-N. I can't remember the term off the top of my head.
So the tree, did I misunderstand? The trunk or the stem is storing the chloroplast?
Not that. They're storing the chemicals and the nutrients that make that. So they'll store, say, a kind of nitrogen, like NO2 nitrite, nitrate, something like that. I can't remember which one they absorb. I'll look it up and I'll figure it out.
Okay.
But there's another theory. The other theory is that the tree basically stops feeding the chloroplasts, and they kind of more or less die. And then when they die, they become a waste product, because now they're not doing anything. So as those parts die, then the tree absorbs the waste products, takes them back into the leaf, and then they start producing these other pigments, these yellows and these reds and oranges and purples. And they start producing these, and no one's quite sure exactly why, but they think, well, maybe up in certain latitudes, the sun in the fall time starts getting a little bit lower in the sky. So you need something that's a little bit darker, like red, or rather, I don't want to say darker, but you get, they start absorbing light at different wavelengths.
Wow.
In order to like take advantage of this last, you know, vestige of light in a given time.
I like that theory way better.
It's a good one, right?
Yeah, that's great.
But I'm not sure 100% why, science is not sure 100% one way or the other. It also could change per tree. Like some trees, they just release their leaves. Alders do this all the time. They'll just let all their green leaves go because they're like, whatever.
Interesting.
Yeah, because they can get nitrogen from their roots because they have this little nodule with a bacteria that grows in it.
They just fold their leaves.
Yeah, they're just like, later.
All right, Casey, let's talk sex, baby.
Oh, hot.
More specifically, sexual reproductive parts
of trees.
Of trees.
And then everyone's like, oh, that's not near as sexy. So the last organ of a tree is the reproductive organs, which is namely the plants and the fruit.
Yeah.
And so what's fascinating about this, and I think that if we get a positive response from this, I think we should go more in depth on, you know, all these things.
Did you say the plants? You mean the flowers?
Yes. What did I say?
You said the plants and the fruit.
Oh, sorry. The flowers and the fruit.
Flowers and the fruit.
Yes. And so the flowers are specific reproductive parts, and most of the time they are modified leaves of some kind.
Hmm.
So if you have a petal, modified leaf, a sepal, modified leaf, all these things.
Wow, interesting.
Do you know the Toyota Corolla?
Sure.
Corolla is the scientific term for the collection of petals. So if you have five petals on a flower, those collectively are called the corolla.
Huh.
So that's why corollas are so beautiful. And if it's a sepal, I believe it's the corona. So it's just, you know, okay.
I wonder if etymologically that is linked to the...
you're pointing at your eye right now.
Yeah, iris? No, iris is also a plant part, isn't it?
It is. Well, it's the name of a plant. It means colors.
Yeah,
cornea.
Cornea.
I don't know. It's a good question.
Because it's like the eye of the flower, you know, like the...
Yeah. I don't know.
That might be a reach, but I like making those connections regardless.
I like them too. And you know what? Etymology is a great idea. A great study.
Etymology is so much.
Well, so you have a plant, and a plant flower is made up of a couple of main parts where really fundamentally flowering plants started evolving when they were, or they started to evolve and then kind of got, I want to say jump started, or at least went into hyperdrive because of insects and other animals. So keep in mind, animals or insects are animals, mm-hmm, in a technical sense. So you have an insect and an animal that all of a sudden starts to be like, oh, wow, that's pretty beautiful. And they're attracted to, say, the nectar in a flower. And, okay, and then I'm talking like a prehistoric flower. They would get attracted to that, spread pollen from one flower to another flower, and then pollinate and fertilize all these other trees. So all of a sudden, instead of just throwing 1,000 pounds of pollen and letting the wind take it away, like what conifers do and a lot of older plants, flowering plants started to produce these little things that instead of just being a seed, they actually created my brain and my mouth just stopped working together right there. So sorry, everybody. So flowering plants started to create they put an ovule, an egg, inside of an ovary. And that's the big change. So if you are looking at a gymnosperm versus an angiosperm, either one has sexual organs. One creates the pollen, the other creates the egg. And gymnosperms, they're just out in the open. Everything is just there. It goes off on the wind, and then it comes back to the other cones, and then boom, you got fertilization.
A ginkgo.
Exactly, yeah. We have that ovule is just sitting out there to get fertilized. Meanwhile, the flowering plants, they added one more layer of complexity onto it where they have that ovary that surrounds the ovule. That ovary is usually at the base of a flower in what's called the receptacle, which is the part that holds the flower onto the stem.
Okay.
So the ovary has the different flower parts that come out that create the pollen and that have the pollen receptor area. So the style and the stigma and all these different organs. Honestly, I'm not even going to go into it because it's so much easier just to put a picture with arrows saying, you know, here is the pistil, which is the female part. Here is the stigma, which is the male part. And if anyone has ever seen a lily with those big orange heads that are covered in pollen, that's the male part of the lily flower. And so the pollen goes from the female part, and it goes and flies through whatever. Maybe it's attached to a bee or a butterfly. And then it lands on another flower of the same species. And that pollen then burrows down through the stem of the style, which is the female part, into the ovary, into the ovule, fertilizes it. And the plant has these modified leaves that are around it that we now call petals.
Mm-hmm.
And those petals are what are the advertisements for whatever insect is coming out there.
Oh.
So they're what saying, look at me, I'm big and beautiful, I'm hot, baby, get on over here. And then the insects and the birds, and then you get the bats and like all these kinds of things, they will run over there, they will take a little bit of extra, a little juice, they get the nectar that comes out that started getting produced. And so the flowers are rewarding these insect pollinators or these bat pollinators, and then after they reward them, the insect has no idea what's going on.
Of course.
It's covered in pollen.
Yeah.
And then it goes and pollinates all these other plants, and the plant has now extremely efficiently, like almost to a like scientific degree, pollinated itself and all of its other brethren without wasting pollen at all.
That's incredible.
Yeah. Isn't that fascinating? And then here's the ticket. Sometimes this grosses people out. A fruit is a mature ovary.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So an apple, mature ovary. And
an apple flower?
Yes. Apples are a little bit different. We're not going to talk about that right now.
An orange?
Same thing.
A mature ovary of an orange flower?
Correct. Of a citrus.
So every fruit has a flower?
Yes. No, because a fruit cone, that would be a fruit. People would say that a mushroom is a fruity bug.
I'm talking like fruit that we buy at the market.
Yes. Oh my God. This is going to drive me insane. People are going to go freak out about this.
What?
So fruit, you know how like there's the culinary definitions of, or not definitions, the ideas of fruit versus vegetables?
Yeah.
So a fruit in a botanical sense is a mature ovary, which is the finished product of the pollination and the reproductive cycle. Okay. So an acorn is a fruit. Samara, that little helicopter from a maple tree, that's a fruit. An apple is a fruit. A walnut is a fruit. So any finished reproductive part, whether it's edible for us or not, or if it's dry like a pea pod, there are dry pea pods from, say, the Gladitzia triocanthus. It's the honey locust. It's these long pea pods that are completely inedible to us.
Oh, yeah. I've seen those.
Yeah. Those, that's a fruit. That counts because it is a dry fruit with the little seeds that are inside.
So this a seed is not a fruit, but it is a part of a fruit.
Yes. The fruit is what has the seeds inside it, or the fruit is rather... The fruit is rather the mechanism that disperses the seed.
Okay, I think I get it. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Wow, interesting.
Isn't it? And then on top of that, the culinary definition of like, oh, well, I'm sorry, a tomato is a vegetable, not a fruit. It's like, nah, a tomato is a fruit. But then like, well, is a potato a vegetable? Good question. A potato is a root. Is a carrot a vegetable?
A root.
It's a root. That a root.
Well, it's a root. We would call it a root vegetable.
Yeah, exactly. But it is completely, like, absolutely 100% different physiologically and botanically than a pea pod.
It's a false fruit.
Yeah, exactly. And they're all vegetables. I mean, so a tomato is a fruit. A strawberry is a fruit. An acorn is a fruit. So if you're eating, if someone's like, eat your fruits and vegetables, you can just go get a pile of walnuts and eat those because that counts.
Yeah.
Exactly. See, now we're getting into culinary. Who knows?
I just Googled because one of my favorite fruits is mango.
Yeah.
And since every fruit has a flower, I Googled mango flower.
And they're beautiful, aren't they?
They're here on Google Images.
Yeah. And walnuts have flowers. Maples have flowers. Lindens have flowers. Trees of heaven have flowers. They just happen to be flowers that have been specialized because we've had flowering trees for like 225 some million years. So some of them have specialized and created these really big, beautiful things like magnolias.
Yeah.
Those are some of the most ancient of flowers. They are like the standard, the perfect flower that has both female and male parts on the inside versus a non-perfect flower that maybe there's only male flowers on one tree and female flowers on the other tree. Dioecious, meaning two houses.
Ginkgos.
Ginkgos, yeah, exactly. Yep. So you have these dioecious flowering plants, which are different from ginkgos in that they flower. So you have the, like a holly is a great example. We have male holly plants that produce flowers that have pollen. And then you have flowers that have the female reproductive parts that accept the pollen, the eggs. And then those turn into the little berries and those little holly berries. Those are the mature ovaries of a holly plant.
Wow. Interesting.
Yeah.
I think something just clicked for me. Like when you explained it with holly, I was like, oh shit. Okay.
Yeah. So there are some hollies that do not produce those little red berries.
That's really interesting.
There you go.
So I guess only female hollies produce berries. Right? Because they're the only ones that have the ovule
exactly
to produce the fruit.
Precisely.
And wow.
So back to like, what is a tree? Generally, people would say that a tree would have all of these different parts.
Yeah.
But there are some people who say, well, you know, it has to be this amount, this height, and it has to have less than one stem. And it's like, well, that seems completely, I mean, well, actually, pun intended. Completely arbitrary.
Yes.
Also completely arbitrary.
Wow, you just turned into a little elf man.
Yeah, I did. Sorry. Delete that. So a palm tree. Some people say a palm is not a tree because it doesn't have that secondary xylem. But it also has all these other organs that we're talking
about.
Yeah,
it has fruit
and
flower. And
you can take a big shrub like what we were talking about and say a big shrub is a little tree. Or you can say a little tree is a big shrub. So it's like, okay, I see that. But then what about like bamboo, which is actually in the grass
That's
family?
Right.
You have bamboo that gets huge, gets really woody. It doesn't grow wider, but you have these massive, big, like 30, 40 foot tall bamboo plants.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, that meets a definition of a tree. So I would reckon that a tree, rather, I don't think that term is right. I would argue that a tree is less of a very specific botanical definition, and it's more of a useful thing, you know?
Yeah.
It's how you see it, how it's used.
Sure. It feels more fluid than like a hard yes or no, is this a tree?
Exactly.
It's more nuanced, as you said.
It's so much more nuanced.
That's really fascinating, Casey. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad to have the conversation.
And I hope everybody enjoyed that as much as I did.
Oh, great.
I've sat here completely enthralled almost the entire time. Almost the entire time.
We did take a break.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, and I think, you know, whoever's listening to this, please reach out and let's like continue this conversation.
Yeah.
But I cannot encourage you enough to go and read Colin Tudge's book, The Tree, and actually get into his definitions, because he's got a lot of nuances that he brings up as well that really says, okay, what is this? And why are we making these arbitrary decisions on what is and is not a tree? When it's like, well, do we really need it? Maybe for regulation, like the city of Portland, you know, we would not consider arborvita a tree. But that's because we want people to plant bigger things. And so we're like, yeah, we're not gonna count little shrubby like trees, because we want big trees. We want things that actually produce larger canopies. So in some instances, it's very good to define a tree as something and come up with an arbitrary line. But other times, who cares? You know
what I mean? Yeah, it feels maybe like that's sort of like a little elitist to like to draw a really hard line and say these things are trees and these things. And that seems a little like close-minded.
It really is, yeah. It's like you put yourself in a box.
Yeah, yeah. Don't put yourself in a box.
Now be free.
Yeah, think outside the box. Think like outside the bun.
Yeah, think outside the bark.
I want Taco Bell now.
Oh, God. I need to break you of that.
I don't eat a lot of Taco Bell.
Shut up, Alex.
That's an unfair characterization of me.
You're eating Taco Bell right now. I can hear the crunch.
Rap supreme.
Oh, look at you. You're crazy.
All right, Case. Thank you for that. And thank you all of you who are listening to our very first Patreon episode.
We love you.
We really do. Thanks a lot for being here.
Also, send us a message. And if you want to hear any more specifics about these things, or have a specific thing that you're like, listen, motherfucker, I pay for this, so give me what I ask for. Okay, sounds good.
Yeah, why not? So, I mean, also the production of these things might be a little, you know,
chill,
free form. Like, obviously, we're pretty loosey goosey tonight. We didn't really have a structure going into this, but we might record. You know, we plan on going out into the arboretum, out into the forest.
We got a lot more coming.
Yeah, doing some remote records.
Yeah, but if there is something that you're like, wow, I really have this dying question that if we don't cover it in one of our shows, ask us and then we'll see about covering it here.
For sure. Cool. Thanks, everybody.
Bye.
See ya.